Welcome to Nashville to Memphis, a podcast hosted by Dr. Jason Lee McKinney, a recording artist, songwriter, and the rock star professor. N2M is a podcast where Jason and a guest or two literally talk on the phone while Jason is driving down I-40. The only subject criteria is that this podcast is all about the random crap Jason thinks about. So, all of you podcasting and audiophiles, just chill on the sound quality, you dig? Jason is a front pocket theologian, back pocket socio-philosopher, and a jockstrap surveyor of the music industry. You may not be able to make sense of it all, but that's okay. Neither can he. Thanks for listening to Nashville to Memphis. Don't forget to rate and write a review for the podcast on iTunes. You can find it under the title Nashville to Memphis. You can reach the podcast at www.facebook.com/Nashville to Memphis. And check out Jason's music at www.jasonleemckinneyband.com, as well as iTunes and Spotify under Jason Lee McKinney Band.
Worry the bottle, mama. It's grapefruit wine. This week on N2M, we dive into the world of FM, the terrestrial world filled with extraterrestrial personalities. I talk with Jack Burton, who is the vice president for AAA at the FMQB charts. Friday Morning Quarterback, better known as FMQB, is a trade magazine which covers the radio and music industries in the United States. Its coverage includes programming, management, promotion, marketing, and airplay for music formatted radio. I gave Jack a ring on my smart computation machine. We have a conversation about the state of radio, corporate and independent, as well as the history and future for FMQB and specifically AAA. So sit back, buckle up, open that freshly purchased bag of fried football, otherwise known as cracklins. Listen close. You may actually learn something on this week's episode of Nashville to Memphis.
All right. So, a lot of people probably wouldn't know FMQB. Just talk a little bit about what those charts are. What does it track? How does it differ from what people would, Billboard charts? Just to sort of give the elevator speech on FMQB.
Okay. Well, if you're speaking specifically about our AAA charts.
Yes.
What's different here from, say, BDS, Media Base, anything like that, is that, first of all, we have a bigger panel. We have about 110, 115 stations on the panel. That fluctuates as people come on and off. We also specifically track non-commercial AAA, which the other ones don't do. They will take programming strategy-wise the top tier of AAA non-commercial stations that are playing songs and are a little bit more in the mainstream. We also have a huge amount of community stations and smaller stations. And by doing that, we then end up with two charts. I'm trying to say this succinctly. If you look at BDS or if you look at Media Base, they have what they call a monitor chart, where they actually are electronically monitoring these radio stations and getting their spins, and they make that one chart. And then they have a separate indicator chart, which includes some non-commercial stations, although some of the bigger ones are monitored. It depends on the market rather than the designation of the station. And they have what they call an indicator chart, and these are the stations that they have on their panel but are not in monitored markets. So these stations have to go into a website and physically input their chart every week. And those two charts never meet. There isn't an overall airplay chart, and there's no non-commercial radio chart. And a lot of what happens at AAA, because AAA is what we call a ground-up format rather than a top-down, meaning you don't go out and get the 5 or 10 biggest stations and expect everybody else to fall in line.
Right.
You have to build a story at AAA. And very often, that'll start at the bottom of the panel, the bottom tier, the community stations, the indicator commercial stations, as if you're looking at the other one. So when you get to FMQB, you see two charts. You see a tracks chart, and that takes all the spins from all of the stations on our panel, whether they are non-commercial or commercial, regardless of market size, everything is equally weighted.
Gotcha.
And this is how those, as long as they're reporting songs, because a lot of the non-coms on the lower end will report albums.
Right.
So as long as they're reporting songs, they all count towards the tracks chart. So that doesn't tell you what's happening in the top 15 markets, and then here's what's happening in all the other markets. It tells you what's happening at the format as
right.
a whole. Then you get over to the non-commercial chart, and that takes all the spins, whether a non-commercial station is reporting tracks or reporting albums. Although all the spins get rolled into the album, and then you have a non-commercial album chart. So you can see what's going on in the non-commercial world as a whole, not broken into classes, so to speak.
Gotcha. And so correct me if I'm wrong here, but with, you know, the BDS, the charts, it's really heavily weighted towards the big Cumulus and Clear Channel and South Central and those sort of corporate conglomerates that are all powerful, where in this case, it kind of goes back to locally owned mom and pops have as much power as those corporate conglomerates because they all count as stations. Is that, would that be a correct assessment?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that actually, you know, and I would say in my estimation in the music business, as the corporate conglomerates start to struggle because the money is not there what it is, there's this whole thing where we keep thinking the music industry is evolving, and it's really devolving. And I don't mean that in a negative sense. It's devolving back to what it was, to where radio stations, and you would have people who regionally break out. I mean, people forget the Allman Brothers, really, while Dwayne was alive, really were a regional act. They had some national success, but they really weren't a huge national band. They were Southern America, you know, the Southern. And so that sort of opens up and levels the playing field for artists that don't have that big, powerful, they don't have the money, quite frankly, like the major labels, to get Clear Channel to play them. And then they get all those spins because it's all filtered through this, you know, one playlist. So can you talk about, as independent artists or independent labels, just the effect, the positive effect that FMQB has on them?
Well, I think, to be fair, the entire AAA format does. FMQB is just, in my personal, very slanted view, the best reflection of that. Everybody's in business now. So the other charts are set up to meet the business needs of their corporate owners. FMQB is set up to meet the business needs of its business structure, which is to empower all those radio stations. Because AAA is still, could possibly be the only major radio format that still has the bulk of the programmers making programming decisions on the ground in their stations.
Right.
They're not getting directed by corporate. We have maybe four corporate stations in the five, six in the whole format, and only two of them are in major markets, three of them. But so what we do is, you're absolutely right. This is a place where you can look at a chart, and where you might look at BDS, you might look at Mediabase, and back at the beginning of his career, not see Josh Ritter getting any traction. You would then look at the FMQB chart and go, why is this guy in the top 30 over here, but he doesn't crack the top 50 over there? And it's because of all of those smaller stations being counted towards the same chart.
Right.
You can also look at a non-commercial chart, and a lot of non-commercial stations have a little bit less corporate pressure, even the big ones. So they're major tastemakers, and you can say, wow, here's something that's not even registering on the tracks chart, but it's number 10 at non-com. What's going on there? Why? And what that also does is, when you have radio stations supporting an artist, building their profile in their individual markets, you then create a touring cycle for an artist that they didn't have before because they have support in these markets. So a lot of the model on the artist side now, where there are artists who don't sell tons of records and they don't get into the top 25 on any radio chart, including AAA or non-com, but they can still tour lucratively because they're getting enough support from these types of radio stations.
Right. And I think that's something, you know, in the world that's changing and playlists are becoming a big thing and Spotify and Apple Music and all that, which I don't necessarily think is a negative thing. But when you're talking about what you just said about creating a touring cycle or spaces where you know you're having a local impact, that's something that a playlist on Spotify can't give you. It's something like even knowing, you know, the FMQB or the charts, the AAA charts, knowing where you're getting played can create that. I mean, if you get on a massive Spotify playlist and you get 100,000 new spins, new streams, that's amazing. But you don't know what to do with that touring-wise. Where in this case, you know, I'm getting spins in Erie, Pennsylvania. I can now call clubs and go, I'm getting played there. How do we turn this into a show? Call the radio station and say, hey, how do we put on a show together? So, I mean, in that sense, have you guys felt the impact of streaming, and has it been negative? Or because you guys give equal weight to the locally owned radio station, are you kind of immune to that impact?
I don't think anybody in the world today in any business, and particularly the music business, is immune to any impact on any changes in your industry. It all affects it. It affects marketing dollars. It affects how the labels spend, and how the labels spend certainly impacts our ability to do our jobs. And the labels don't place the same level of value. They still value radio. But when I got into this business decades ago, radio was it. That was how you got out to people.
Right.
But now with Spotify, with Pandora, you know, they can, you know, you can get all these spins at radio and reach less people than you're seeing streams on Spotify. But what I will tell you, so yes, it's kind of has changed our place, because our place is always reflected by radio's place in the marketing scheme.
Right.
But I will tell you what Spotify and Pandora and any other streaming service don't give the artists, don't give the public that radio does, which also impacts our business, which is why we're still here. If you're getting your stuff off of Pandora or Spotify stream, you're getting things that an algorithm thinks you personally, Jason, are predisposed to like.
Right.
So you're not getting exposed to different things that might pique your interest. Radio, particularly AAA radio, isn't hyper-targeting the way that Spotify does, or even Top 40 radio does.
Right.
So you will get, if you are listening to a radio station because they're playing some things you like, you are going to get exposed to things that would never come up on your Spotify stream, would
right.
never come up on your Pandora stream. That, and on top of that, they're being curated. They're being curated by the voice of a person that you have come to think of as a friend because you listen to them every day and you trust them musically. And it's them tacitly saying to you, well, I know you like Steve Earle, but you also might like the Black Keys, and I'm playing them next to Steve Earle.
Right.
And now you've discovered something that you wouldn't have found if Spotify was just looking at the algorithms of what you're choosing to listen to.
And that
gives new artists a great opportunity to bring in new fans and not get built into a little tiny corner where it's almost like a ghetto, a genre ghetto.
Right. Well, and it's interesting you say that because, you know, in the 70s, from what I hear, that radio was much less genre specific. That you know, my dad would tell me that you would hear Willie Nelson, and maybe not in the same time of day, but you'd hear Willie Nelson on the same channel you'd hear Kiss at night, or Zeppelin and Elton John not too far apart, you know, where it was just sort of...
And you actually would hear them, and you would hear them in the early 70s, late 60s, freeform radio. You would hear them in the same day part. You might hear them in the same set of music, as you still might on some of the more creative and wider programmed AAAs, particularly
right.
on the non-commercial side. I mean, you just described WXPN in Philadelphia or WFUV in New York.
And that's also, I think there's more creativity to that. And I think there's more opportunity for, like I said, regionally based artists or artists that have that niche market, that they have pockets of the country where they are loved and are massive. I mean, people forget that a legend like Bob Seger had the one hit with Ramblin' Gamblin' Man, and then he didn't have another hit for a while. And he was just basically a Michigan, Northern Indiana, Ohio artist until...
Very good example. I saw Bob Seger the first time. It was Bob's in 1975 or 76. And he was opening for Wishbone Ash in a 4,000-seat theater in Philadelphia. That's the same tour he headlined Cobo Arena, where they recorded the live Bullet album.
Wow.
That's the difference in what his draw was between Detroit and Philadphia.
And so
in Philadelphia, he was an opener in a 4,000-seat hall. In Detroit, he was a headliner in a 15,000-seat arena.
Right. And that, I think, is a positive thing because it allowed artists to find their voice. The same thing with Springsteen being sort of a regional guy for a while, you know, even though he had label support. But I think that's going to open up, as this continues to happen, it's going to open up more opportunities for people to develop as artists and not just be, it's almost like there's two music industries. There's the superstar, got to go through the big machine. The only way to be one of those superstars on Clear Channel is to spend massive chunks of money and to sort of make the sort of homogenous music that does that performs well in that mechanism. But then there's this other music industry where you have people that you mentioned, Steve Earle or Jason Isbell, or even people who break out of it like Chris Stapleton, who, you know, what do you listen to? Didn't get played on massive radio stations, but I heard it on a radio station and fell in love with it. And so you have these other artists that are building true arcs, career arcs that I think you can have. Not that it's weird music, but it's just music that doesn't fit that very homogenous, single shelled mold. And it's a much more creative space, I'm saying, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, there is.
Yeah, go ahead.
There is, and it is true. I think that we all, though, and I don't want you to take this the wrong way. When I'm listening to what you're saying, I am hearing an ideological view of something that is a for-profit business for everybody. Even most non-commercial radio stations still have to make their nut.
Correct, yeah.
To keep the lights on. And what's happened in the industry and in American business, international business as a whole, is we've gotten away from the mom-and-pop model. So there's a couple things we need to remember here before we have an ideological conversation. And that is that when you talk about the Clear Channels, or iHeartRadio as they now are known,
right,
and the quote-unquote homogenous music they play, that they wouldn't be playing it. I mean, their goal and their job is to have their largest quarter hours in a cluster that they can package a bunch of different radio stations into to sell to advertisers at an agency level, because they're beholden to stockholders. Now, let's remember that they would not be getting those numbers on those radio stations if people hated what they were hearing on those radio stations. Most people are not as music intensive as my generation was when it grew up. And that's not a value judgment. It just means there's a lot of other forms of entertainment that people are, that there's now social media, there's the internet, there's everything that's happened in the last 40 years since I was in my 20s, or 50 years since I was in my teens, where music was our social media. That was what brought us together.
Right.
That's music. That music does not play that role in mainstream society anymore.
Right.
So it's much tougher for these niche artists that you're talking about, niche artists, to properly say the word, to get exposure. So they're using all of these other platforms. A lot of very successful touring bands aren't heard on the radio anywhere, including AAA radio. I put on this convention in Boulder every year for AAA radio, and there are bands that get work to me every year. Well, this band should be headlining the Fox Theater. Well, yeah, based on their touring profile and the fact that they can sell out three nights at Red Rocks, yes, they should. But they're not getting played at radio, and this is a convention for radio programmers.
Right.
That's not where their career lies. So it's important to understand that there's a lot of other factors at work other than just, and I'm not saying you said this, but this is where some people go, big evil corporations that don't have no soul. That's not really what it's about. It's about that they're businesses. Now, if we're lucky on the music side of things, as the debt burden on these big corporations like iHeart, like Cumulus, like CBS, is getting so large that they're selling off radio stations, although CBS just actually merged with a family-owned company, or is in the process of a merger. Hopefully, for music, they will be able to, or they will actually be forced to, sell these stations off at such a low price that debt burden does not translate, and that smaller operators are able to buy these stations and not have the debt burden that goes with these transactions.
Right.
Because that's what has changed radio programming. That has changed how labels nurture their artists or don't. And that can vary from label to label, and the methods that they use. Because with all of the mergers and the huge debt load, we have gone from the era where as long as we break even, as long as everybody gets paid and we break even, we're okay. Where nobody's okay.
Right.
Doing that. Because they have to pay the bank. They have to pay the interest. They have to pay the loan. And that also tempers, my hope that what you're saying is you're seeing happening is happening. I have hope that that's what's happening. But I also have the analytical side of my brain that goes, but will anybody ever be able to sell off the stations that are dragging them down because of debt burden without just saddling somebody else with the same debt burden that makes
right.
them not program locally and makes them program efficiently?
Right. And I wasn't trying to say that I don't think that either of the two dual music businesses I was describing are one is good and one is bad. They just are different. They really are just two different businesses that's what I was trying to say. And you're talking about music, I think is more part of a content industry now where it's one choice and a choice of many, because you have games now. And like you said, you have social media, you have so many more entertainment factors competing with people's attention.
Interesting that you bring that up, because a lot of the dollars that record companies used to put into working radio,
mm-hmm.
they are now putting into working video game manufacturers to get their music included in video games. They are working film and television producers to get their music included in there, whereas that used to be the afterthought.
Right.
Now it's those are both revenue streams. But they're also considered almost equal to radio as ways to get the music into potential customers' ears.
Right. Right. Fascinating. Fascinating.
Thank you so much for listening to Nashville to Memphis. I hope you enjoy it. I truly value your time and appreciate your listenership. Please go on iTunes and give us a rating. 5 stars helps. It goes a long way. Write a sentence or two. In addition to that, if you wouldn't mind, I love doing this podcast. It is definitely a passion play for me. But like everything else in life, it does cost a little bit of money. So if you would, go to Spotify and follow the Jason Lee McKinney Band. Give us a stream or two and put us on your playlist. And then also go into iTunes and download a song or two. We have 5 albums out. And it truly goes a long way. Every download counts. Every single one. Share us with your friends. Check it out. Support the podcast. Support the band. JasonLeeMcKinneyBand.com. Spread it around to all your friends, neighbors, and fans. Yourself. And I truly appreciate listening to Nashville to Memphis. Back to the show.
How did you come into your role in FMQB? How did you kind of sort of, what's the journey that you took?
The journey was a kid who always wanted to be in music business and in radio, and then life had other, as John Lennon once said, life made other plans, and became a retail executive and was miserable. Right about the time we had the great AAA scare of the early 90s. And it was right when non-commercial stations, some of them, were starting to make the leap from being community stations or college stations programmed by volunteers and being really weird to trying to be an alternative source of music that could play better music, but that was more akin to the freeform stations or even the early album rock stations of the 60s and 70s. And I was fortunate enough that one of those stations at the front end of that was the University of Pennsylvania station, WXPN, which the university had made a decision to turn it into a professional radio station that would hopefully be self-sufficient. So all of a sudden, in my late 30s, I found a radio station that, as a music fan who had kind of gotten lost as far as what was on the radio for 10 or 15 years, I found a radio station that spoke to me, spoke to my soul musically, what I always loved about music and radio, where I stumbled onto it one night and heard Joni Mitchell into Ella Fitzgerald into the Gin Blossoms, who were a new band at the time. Mm-hmm. And I went, wow. One thing my dad used to listen to, one thing I used to listen to, and something new that I actually liked. And I started to listen, and I started to volunteer at fun drives until I saw an opportunity to beg them for a job because I had been a radio guy in college and had wanted to go into radio, and got hired to do weekend overnights. So I spent 3 or 4 years at XPN, got the music director midday job at WYEP in Pittsburgh, spent 3 years there, and then got recruited to come run the AAA department at FMQB in 2001. And I came back here. And it was right as the industry started to just really become awash in all of these changes. We went from 25 major labels to 3 major labels with lots of imprints. We went from lots of locally owned radio stations to regionally owned radio stations to national chains with thousands or hundreds of radio stations. And so radio didn't look like, as much as I wanted to go back to it, didn't look like such a great option unless I wanted to start moving my family every 3 years.
Right.
Which in my 40s, I really didn't want to do. And the ownership of FMQB at the time and senior management pretty much went, we don't understand this AAA world you seem to, and more kept giving me free rein to change everything about how we did business in one department and make it different from the way the rest of the company did business to serve this very unique music-intensive community that still, in many ways, as far as programming values and musical values, lives in the late 60s or 70s, not meaning that we're not playing forward, that we're not forward-thinking, but just that we still value the emotional connection that listeners make with their music and with their radio stations.
Awesome. Awesome.
And I was able, and mostly then for 16 years, I've been listening to the labels tell me what they need to help them work their records to this community, because that's honestly where the revenue comes from. And I've been listening to radio to hear what we can do to help their jobs be easier and help, for lack of a better phrase, and I say this somewhat whimsically, keep the world safe for handcrafted radio.
Wow, that's a pretty amazing mission. I appreciate you being willing to do this and being on. Is there any final parting thoughts you want to have before we wrap it up, as Fabulous Thunderbirds would say?
You know, just that I think that it's important that musicians and radio people who are coming at it from a creative end and people who really value the music remember that even when they're feeling embattled by the corporate demands placed on us in an industry that grew up by not having corporate demands, you know, by Ahmet Erdogan being able to sign a band or an artist because he just felt it.
Right.
And then being able to, you know, which you can't do anymore. And radio stations being able to play a record just because they like it, which a lot of formats and radio stations can't do anymore. And I, as we look at that and we feel embattled by that, I think it's important for us to remember that to win the game, you got to be in the game. And to be in the game, you got to deal with the reality and not look at these as things that are attacking us, but that we look at it as, okay, everybody's got to make a living. Everybody's got to keep the lights on. That's what they're doing to do that. What can we do to fit in their world but still pursue
right
what we're doing and let the crumbs, and as long as we're willing to live on the crumbs that fall off of the machine. And then we'll all find a place where we can all happily coexist and all help each other continue to get music out into the world. Because I do this, I got into this. Most of the people working in AAA radio that I know didn't get into this to be radio stars. They got into it because they believe in the bonding and healing and community building power of music.
Awesome.
And we've got to remember that our mission is to keep that safe. And, you know, so it's like, you know, well, I'm not going to do, well, maybe you have to do this in order to be able to do that that's really important to you.
Right.
And you're not always selling out just because you're willing to play the game.
All right, so this is the most important question. I ask everyone this, and then I have one that I'll cut from the podcast. But this is the question I ask everyone. It's the most important. It's very, very serious. It's big life stuff. Everyone has songs that they have not probably admitted publicly that they like. And I ask every podcast guest this. So I would like to know, Jack, what is one of your guilty pleasures that you're just a little bit embarrassed or that you have been embarrassed at one point in your life that you've liked?
Okay. Let me just qualify my answer with nothing embarrasses me because I'm just one of those people.
Okay.
But I still love it when I hear Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass doing A Taste of Honey.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, I think it reveals so much about somebody. You hear their guilty pleasures. I've heard everything from Bobby Darin to somebody said ABBA, somebody who was like a super, you know, that I wouldn't have expected, said, you know, Dancing Queen. I tell you who it was. It was Jody Stevens from Big Star. Said his guilty pleasure is Dancing Queen. He loves that song.
And as much
as Big Star gets, you wouldn't have thought he would say that, but there he is. He was like, yeah,
but you know what?
Dancing Queen.
But you know what? That's because he's a music person. And if you love music, it's all music.
Right.
It's all music. It's just presented in a different way. You know, yes, ABBA had some great songs. I'm not a fan, but they're great songs, and I don't necessarily turn them off if they come on in context.
Right.
On a radio station or a stream I'm listening to. And Bobby Darin. I mean, I got to tell you, when I was 4 or 5 years old, I thought Mac the Knife was the coolest song in the world.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. So, and I'll end the podcast here.
Now that we know I've bent backwards, but I'll be damned if I'll bend over, check out the FMQB charts at http://fmqb.name/triple-a-home/.